Welcome to this week's Out the Rink podcast. My trusty cohort, Dan Rosen, is not here this week. He's at Wally World, playing the role of Clark Griswold. Not really, I believe today he might be at Universal Studios with his family, enjoying a well-deserved vacation before he gets ready for the NHL trade deadline next week. Dan's absence allows us to have a special guest host, Mike Zeisberger, our trusted colleague from NHL.com, based out of Toronto, sports writing legend from Toronto. And it's a perfect time to have him. I think where we'll start today is with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are the center of the hockey universe on most days, but they've actually become the center of the hockey universe by making the biggest trade leading up to the trade deadline, trading for Ryan O'Reilly and Noel Achari. And last night, on Tuesday night, Ryan O'Reilly paid huge dividends, going back to one of his original homes in the Buffalo Sabres and scoring a hat trick and showing Toronto fans what they might have. So, Mike, welcome to the show. And let's start there. Ryan O'Reilly, does he make the Toronto Maple Leafs a Stanley Cup contender now?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's very humbling to be stepping into Dan's shoes. I feel, you know, now I know what David Ayers felt like when he came in as the E-Bug, okay? You know, Sean, I obviously was in Buffalo for the Maple Leafs 6-3 victory over the Buffalo Sabres. And does it take them a step closer? Yes. And you know, I kind of feel like the quarterback this morning, you know, when the home crowd is getting all cranked up and you got to put your arms up and just wave it down a little bit and say, relax, because you know, Ryan O'Reilly is not going to get a hat trick every night. The line of Tavares, Marner, and O'Reilly is not going to get 13 points every night. Part of that was because, as some of the players pointed out, the Sabres play a transition game. And when you go up against a team like that, there are gaps and seams, and the Leafs exploited it. I would say, Sean, that they have taken a step closer because you've seen a different Ryan O'Reilly. You know, he seems, and I'm not saying he wasn't motivated in St. Louis. Well, hey, in St. Louis, he never played with talent like, and no, you know, no offense, they won a Stanley Cup, but if you look at the raw talent, he never played with line mates like Tavares and Marner before, but he just gives, and here's the reason that I say it brings him a step closer. He brings them a couple of things. Number one, that kind of feisty edge that they've been missing in the playoffs. But number two, you know, they're going to go up against a Tampa team. I think we all agree that's where they're heading. That's going to throw out their Braden Point, Cirelli, and Stamkos up the middle. Okay. And that, look at when they won in seven games, Tampa last year over Toronto, that was part of it. You know, there was a decisive edge up the middle. Now you got Matthews, you've got O'Reilly, and you've got Tavares, depending on where you're going to move Tavares. But you match up far better against the Tampa Bay Lightning than you did a year ago. And I think that, you know, the way that Sheldon Keefe can now juggle his lineup a little bit, he's got five or six guys that can play center. I think that flexibility makes them, like I said, a step closer.
I think the point that you made that's really cogent is he brings them into the fight. He's no shrinking violet, Ryan O'Reilly. He's in your face. I thought the piece that you did, you know, right after the trade where, you know, he texted his dad and said, you know, hey, wouldn't it be great as a local kid to bring the cup home? Like, he thinks that way. Like, and I think that's really important for a team that's been psychologically fragile for a long time and now has this huge burden of failing so many times that Ryan O'Reilly's never lived with. He didn't make any of these failures. No. He can come in and kind of inject a piece of optimism and freedom to this team, I think.
No, I agree. And the other thing is, I mean, he's won a cup already. He's won a Conn Smythe already in St. Louis. The difference, I would say, is that from a pure talent standpoint, I mean, obviously, we know how important he was on that Blues run to the Cup in 2019. On the Maple Leafs, you could argue, you know, he's the sixth or seventh most talented guy on the team. So he doesn't have to be, you know, like in St. Louis, he was the leader along with Pietrangelo. He was the heartbeat of the team. He brings that intangible into the room, but he doesn't have to be what the one, number one or number two guy that everybody hooks their wagons to. And he can, you know, that's one of the reasons, Sean, that they, you know, Sheldon Keefe said he put him with Marner and Tavares right off the hop, is to make him feel good right at the beginning, to get confidence, play with skilled players, put some points on the board. And I think he's done that. So, and he's also got a pedigree. Look, there's not a lot of guys in that dressing room walking around with one of those rings. Okay. He's got one, and the power of the ring, you know, the games are still won on the ice, on the scoreboard, but like you said, there's a psychological aspect to this team of not getting over the hurdle. He's never been a part of that, so I don't think he really has that same thing to overcome.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be liberating for him to not be the guy. Now, my other question for you about this before we move on to other things is Tavares okay on the wing?
Judging by the fact that he got 4 points last night, I would say so. That's not always going to happen. But you know what? He looked good against there. I mean, he's not going to blow guys off the puck in the corner, but the way, you know, when he talked about it, O'Reilly has the type of smarts that even though he's a center, he can go into the corners and he can dig pucks out, and they just play off each other very well. So Keith did say, you know, as they were leaving last night, well, you know, John will be back at center at some point. So all of a sudden the Toronto media is scrambling. Like you said earlier, you're going to stick with this line. Now you're going to do this. I just think that Sheldon Keefe right now is like a kid that got this whole brand new box of toys and is looking for different ways to put them together. And before we leave the Leafs, I just want to say, I didn't really know how good in terms of the role that he has, that Noel Achari, and I hope I said that right, I'm going to have to learn how to do it, but how good he is. Yeah, he's a bottom six forward, but the physical presence, the penchant to go into the greasy areas in front of the net, he scored against Chicago, is, again, another aspect that the Leafs don't have. It's going to shake up their bottom six because some of these more finesse players are looking at this guy going, hey, our jobs are on the line here. And I did like an informal poll of about 8 or 10 scouts who were at the game last night. And there was a heck of a lot of them. So you always think that something might be brewing, but they all said that they loved the Leafs acquisition of both players, but they thought that Achari is a very, very underrated player and that he brings something to the Leafs again that they didn't really have before.
Not only that size, but he's a good Rhode Island boy. Went to my high school.
Did he really?
Back in the day. Yeah, yeah. So, but he's great. And he's been underrated his whole career, I thought, ever since he played in Boston. So I think he's a huge part of their deal. But we need to move on. Before we do, we have some guests coming up. The Winnipeg Jets are in New York City. They were kind enough to stop by the offices. And we sat down with Mason Appleton and Kyle Hoopa Bianco. You couldn't say Achari. I had a little trouble right there, but we got through it. So we're going to have that interview in a little bit, really revealing stuff about Rick Bowness and where the Jets are. So we have that. But before we get there, Zeiss, I have to ask you as an outsider, because I lived it and I know what it was like, and I thought it was truly brilliant. But your take on the Stadium Series game in Raleigh?
Oh, it was incredible. And you know, Sean, sometimes I get, you know, especially being in Canada where, you know, hockey is always on the forefront of people's minds, you know, and you get these cynics saying, well, why do they keep having these games? You know, there's so many of them. Well, you know what? Do you ever see any empty seats? And you and I have done a number of them together. No, this is that, you know, Steve Mayer always finds a way to kind of implement the region, something specific to that region. And it's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's become a local thing. All you had to do is watch that spectacle. It looked like a college football atmosphere on the ice. It's great. And I got to give a shout out to the Hurricanes organization, because there was a time that where that was kind of a hockey wasteland. If you went there, you'd be lucky to get 10,000 people there. You know, from the storm surge to the team they put on the ice, this is now, they have become a thing in a place where, and I don't think people understand this, you got North Carolina, North Carolina State, and Duke within 45 minutes of each other. So you could argue that's the biggest college basketball hotbed in North America. And the fact that the Hurricanes have been able to take a chunk of the audience and say, hey, we have our niche in this market too. I just thought it was incredible. And, you know, if it was half as good to be there as it was watching on TV and the atmosphere, that is awesome.
It was three times as good. It was unbelievable. You know, the last game we did, the stadium series before COVID hit, was at Air Force. And I remember sitting in the press box and just watching the taillights come in for the game. And it was like Field of Dreams, right? When they're coming into the cornfield. That's what this week was like in Raleigh. The traffic was insane. You know, I got to the rink at 4 o'clock for 8 o'clock face-off, and all of the parking lots were full, right? Rocky Like a Hurricane playing everywhere, pig roast going on, football, hockey, lacrosse all being played. It was just crazy. And then it was like a bowl game, right? Inside with the band, cheerleaders with fire batons. It was unbelievable. And then on top of all of that, you have the Carolina Hurricanes, who just strangled the Washington Capitals. I mean, just put on a clinic. They've done it to Boston now, one of the few teams to beat Boston this year handily. You know, Thursday night when we got there, it was Cam Ward's retirement, a great ceremony for a classic Kane, and they did it to the Montreal Canadiens. Like, they're a team that's going to have to be reckoned with when you come to the playoffs. To me, they're the best team in the NHL right now. They're better than the Bruins. They have a 900 win percentage since January 21st. 900. The top three teams are them, the Devils, and the Rangers, and they all live in the same division. So the Devils and the Rangers have played 750 hockey and have lost ground to the Carolina Hurricanes. Martin Natchez was unbelievable. Svechnikov was insane. I mean, they were just flying. Brent Burns looks like he's reincarnated. Nothing like the player he was the last couple of years. So, you know, we all talk about the Bruins and how the Leafs are going to have to get through all these teams. And meanwhile, Carolina is just sitting there and playing this fast brand of hockey that there's very few teams in the NHL when they're on their game that I think can handle them.
Well, there's two things about Carolina, and I agree. I'm with you in the enthusiasm for that team and the way that they play that up-tempo game. Number one, and it's just because I've seen it, I like Freddie Anderson as a person. When he's on, he's on. I just always worry about when's that next injury coming, especially going into the playoffs. Although I'm probably higher on backup Antti Raanta than a lot of people are, because I do think you can win with a guy like him. But the other thing is, you know, Max Pacioretty kind of gave them that, you know, pushing them over the mountaintop kind of in my estimation. And when he was hurt, I'm not saying that they need somebody to replace him. But, you know, Sean, I mean, to see a Patrick Kane or to see a Timo Meier end up there, I think, and you mentioned it, I mean, Boston, Toronto, Tampa, the Rangers, the Devils, I mean, we go through what the Eastern Conference is going to be like. Everybody's looking for that little nudge. I think if they could get one of those two guys, I would give them that, because I got to say, when I look, and I hate doing this, please erase this after this will this tape will explode like in Mission Impossible 20 seconds after I say this. But I agree with Rosen. I think that the New York Rangers might be the most complete team in the National Hockey League right now. I love the city of Boston. It's one of my favorite cities, but I just love what the Rangers have done. But I think Boston's another team that's going to make a move here. So I think, you know, in the next, up until that March 3rd trade deadline, this arms war that's going on in the Eastern Conference is going to be just fascinating to watch.
Yeah, no, it will. And before we leave Carolina, I just want to say that they played on Monday night. They played North Carolina against North Carolina State Club Hockey outdoors at Carter Finley Stadium. 26,000 people showed up. So anybody who wants to tell me that that was a one-off and that Carolina is not a hockey market, they can go pound sand, because you don't get 26,000 to watch club hockey anywhere. And I understand that the stadium was a draw, but I don't care. Like, those are hockey fans that are showing up. And that building remains the loudest I've ever been in when they were winning the Stanley Cup. My ears still ring from that sometimes. So, you know, you mentioned the East, and we'll talk a little bit trade deadline, I think, coming out of our interview. But I actually asked Mason Appleton in the interview we're about to have about if the guys out West are a little bit sick of hearing about how great the East is. We just went over it. There's some pretty good teams out West, but we'll let Mason and Kyle talk a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets and their time in New York City and in this interview that we're going to play right now. Guys, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. I know it's a busy weekend. You want to enjoy New York City, so we won't keep you too long. But 30 games out now, you guys are at the top of the division. What's it like every day with things being so competitive?
It's good. You know, Coach Bone said it the other day, it's tough to get to the top, but it's even harder to stay there. And I think we've been dealing with that a little bit, playing, some good games, some average games, and kind of haven't been quite consistent as we'd like to be at the start of the season. But we're in a great spot, and we're a good hockey team, and I think we realize that. And with 25 games left, we got to make a real good push here, because the division's so tight, just 2 or 3 games might be the difference at the end of this thing. So it's one game at a time, but we got to play our best hockey down the stretch here and hopefully find ourselves in a good spot come the start of the playoffs.
Are you like a fan? Do you wake up every day and look at NHL.com, look at the standings, see what happened the night before, or can you not worry about that?
We actually see it right in our lounge when we walk into the rink, so that's kind of when I check it out. But I don't really start looking at it until now, because, 82 games, so much can happen. But now's the time of the year when every point matters, really. And, like I just said, it's so close in the standings, and there's 3, 4, 5 teams that are fighting for their lives at the top of it. So, we just got to, take care of our business, and then hopefully the rest will take care of itself.
Kyle, when you look at this team, you played for Arizona for a long time, and you look at the difference in the teams. What do you see as the biggest piece of the DNA of the Jets that makes them as good as they are?
The culture and the atmosphere is really good. It helps when we're winning, but it's such a good group of guys that everyone likes each other. On the road, we're all going out to dinners. It's just a really fun atmosphere to be at the rink, and guys are just continually trying to get better at the rink, and I think that's what's helping with our success.
So everybody does a little something together. What's the big plan for the off day today in New York City?
We're just traveling to Long Island right now. The first day we got here, we all went to dinner at this Il Buco. It's a nice Italian spot. We went there, and then just headed back after that.
Oh, there's a story here that you can't tell on the podcast, isn't there?
No, it was just a cool spot in like a wine cellar down there, and then some funny stories by the guys.
That must be really the highlight, right, of when you're on the road. Everybody talks about how hard it is, but those opportunities to kind of bond as a team and have stories that you can kind of relive as you go through the year.
Yeah. I mean, coming to New York City, it's such a cool place. You can always have something to do, and then we've found ourselves some fun times while we're here and doing some stuff as a team.
Mason, you talked a little bit when you answered a minute ago about Coach Bonus, and I'm just curious what he's brought to the team and maybe the different message that's come through since Paul left.
Yeah, Bones is, he's a straight shooter, first and foremost, and, he'll hold every guy on this team accountable, and I think that's probably the biggest thing. Is it doesn't matter if you're the best player or you play the least amount of minutes. He's going to be on you when he doesn't like what he sees, and he's going to respect and appreciate when he does like what he sees. So I think what you're getting with him, and I think that helps every single player, because and his door is always open. I think that's another great thing, because some guys can feel a little uncomfortable trying to talk to a coach or ask him a question. Where you got anything on your mind, you can go and talk to Bones about it, and I think that goes a long way, and it just makes everybody a little more comfortable. So I think he's done a great job so far, and he's a huge reason for our success.
He's certainly seen everything.
Yeah, he's he's been around for a bit, and And he knows that, and I think that's another reason why he took this job, because he's only got so much left in him, and I think that he believes in this team, and you know that shows a lot. And obviously, we want to win for each other, and you want to win for him too.
I'm curious what the security blanket is of having Connor Hellebuyck behind you guys. You're coming off a game last night, 50 saves. You walk out of a really tough building in Madison Square Garden against a really good Ranger team with 2 points. You've been around him a long time. Is this as good as he's ever played?
I would say, yeah. You know, that's no discredit to how he's been in the past. You know, he's one of the best goalies in the league, if not the best. But you take last night for an example, 50 saves, and he probably made 6-8 grade A saves that he made look routine, where they felt they should have scored on him. And I think that that's just the goalie he is and the competitor he is. So I think any night you have him in the net, you have a chance to win no matter how your team plays. And I think that that can also be our team's Achilles heel in a sense where we can get a little lackadaisical and think, oh, we've got Bucky between the pipes. We're all right if we go to sleep here for a little bit. And, you know, come the playoffs, you can't have that. Obviously, you can't have it down the stretch. But I think, we all really appreciate and understand how good Hellebuyck is, and everybody around the league does too. So I think when we're playing our best hockey, and he is as well, we're a really tough team to beat.
Kyle, I'm going to do the same for you. I'm going to ask you to play a little bit of NHL scout here for a minute. You get to watch Josh Norrissey all the time.
Yeah.
See, I just called him wrong. I called him Josh Norrissey instead of Morrissey. Yeah. But you get to watch Josh all the time. He's been a good defenseman for a long time. He's a great defenseman this year. When you look at him and you see his game, what do you see that makes him so good? And maybe what do you see that you're envious of?
Yeah, I mean, he just plays such a confident game. Whatever he does, if it's defending or on the blue line, he plays with confidence and he's making the right play. And then I love watching how he moves his feet and gets away from pressure. And obviously the work that he does on the blue line, he's really awesome to watch.
I mean, you've seen him play before. This is the first time you've been up close to him, but you've seen him obviously when you were in Arizona play. Is there something different this year that you see that maybe wasn't there before?
I only got to see him a bit just playing against him. And this year it just looks like he's taking more of a leadership role. It's like he's trying to, want to be the captain one day, and he's just kind of being a voice in the room, and then that's showing on the ice that, I mean, in tight games, he's like our difference maker. We're leaning on him, and he's scoring big goals.
Mason, you talked a little bit about it being day-to-day now and game-to-game, but do you almost have to take it in segments? Like, I know a lot of teams do, like, five-game segments where you can't live in the day. Like, you lost to Jersey. You gave up the lead 3-1 a little bit earlier this week, or 2-1 earlier this week, and you lose that game. Like, you can't live with that. You have to play the Rangers the next night. So while it is day-to-day, is it also maybe 5-10-game segments where you're looking to have a winning record in each one of those?
Yeah, I think, that's an easy way to put it. You kind of go on a road trip. You kind of think of that as, like, a segment. You go on the road for four. You want to end at least 500. And I think, we drop the first two on the road, immediately your mind shifts to that. We got to get these next two. So I think that's a good way to put it. Obviously, you play 82 games, there's a lot of hockey, and you got to be able to flush it. And, if you get in a little funk, you got to think, we got to get out of this just to be, say a little over or a little under 500 in this set of five or this set of 10. So I think that's a good way to put it. But I think every team and every staff goes about it a little different. You obviously never like to lose two games in a row. I think that just kind of, it's a little cliche to say, but it's a mindset you really got to have in this league. And then when that does happen, you got to find a way to go win the next two. So I think just being able to get over a loss real quick and, and a win, you don't enjoy it too much. You obviously enjoy it, but you got to play the next day or the day after that. So I think it's just that, don't get too high, don't get too low, and just grind the season and, play your best hockey and play what you can do best to, help the team win.
Is there a little bit of concern that Colorado's starting to creep up now? It's been you and Dallas all year kind of going at it, and here comes Colorado, the defending Stanley Cup champions, maybe getting a little bit healthy. Do you kind of look in the rearview mirror a little bit and say, oh, here we go?
Well, I think you'd be dumb to say you didn't see it coming. So I think we all knew what Colorado was. They just won the Cup last year. And you almost, teams have that little lull at the start of the season. They know how good they are. They almost have the ability to start slow and then turn it on. So I think we all knew what they are or they were the whole time. So, it's nothing crazy or nothing I didn't expect. And, I think we match up with them well. They obviously have some insanely good players, but and they're getting healthier right now too. So, they're another good team. And, there's a lot of good teams in the West. But, yeah, I fully expect them to be, where they are right now. And, we can't get too concerned with them.
The last question, you said there are a lot of good teams in the West. Do you guys ever get tired of hearing how great the East is this year?
You know, I guess I can't disagree with it. We haven't had a great record against the East. You got a team like Boston that's, you know, absolutely running away with the league record. But, you know, there are good teams in the East and there are good teams in the West. And, I mean, sure, you get tired of hearing it. But, you know, as a team, we can be better against the East. But, yeah, I guess we're not too focused on it.
Great. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the trip and good luck with the rest of the season.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sides, what a great interview that was. Both those guys really gave us an insight into who the Jets are. I thought Kyle, you know, talking about watching Josh Norrissey, which is what I called him in the interview, and I tried to apologize, and they said, no, that's okay. That's what we call him, too. I thought that was great, and you know, Mason is so good in talking about what Rick Bowness has brought to that team. I'm curious, are you sold on the Jets, or are they a team that we could see in the final in June?
Given the path in the West, I would not count it out. When you have Connor Hellebuck playing the way that he is, you look around the league. I mean, you know, Shesterkin in New York, Hellebuck in Winnipeg, Vasilevsky in Tampa. You know, some people like to put Ottinger in there. But there's, you know, the way the goalie shuffle has gone in the past few years, I just think that Connor Hellebuck is one of these guys that is one of the very few guys that can steal you not only games but series. He was at Madison Square Garden earlier this week when the Jets beat the New York Rangers. He made 50 saves. Okay, that's we're going back a while to see a goalie that can be that dominant. So, yes, and Josh Morrissey has having a breakout year under Rick Bowness. You know, Shifley, Blake Wheeler is playing better now. Kyle Connor is a guy that I really don't think gets enough love from a lot of people because this kid is really, really skilled and one of the best finishers in the league. So I do think that they could make a run, mainly, again, because they have a guy like Connor Hellebuck. And when you go through the West, there's a lot of goalie questions going around with a lot of the other teams of the so-called contenders.
Yeah, and, you know, I asked those guys, are they nervous looking in their rearview mirror and seeing the Colorado Avalanche coming? And I wonder if teams are nervous, right? But Colorado still needs to get healthy. Cale Makar's hurt now, which is just crushing. Landeskog's just starting to make his way back. But, you know, they've been injured all year. I don't think we've gotten a true read on who the Colorado Avalanche are yet. And who they could be. I think, you know, Joe Sakic's one of those sneaky guys. Mm-hmm. I think he's laying in the weeds and there's going to be a move. You know, they need a second line center, I think. So it maybe he makes a move that shakes things up, but I'm still scared to death if I'm in the West of the Colorado Avalanche.
I am too. I still think that, and I agree with you on both points. I mean, Joe Sakic, The Avalanche are that type of team that you never hear anything about. We have all these rumors about where Timo Meier is going, where Patrick Kane might be going. You never hear Colorado that much in there. And then all of a sudden, come trade deadline day, it's the Colorado Avalanche have acquired, place big name here. And it's happened time and time again. Yeah, they do need to get healthy. But it's intriguing because when I look at some of these teams in the West, I look at, you know, we talked about the Jets. We talked about the Avalanche. The Dallas Stars, I think they have a very solid defense. Ottinger in goal. I mean, we saw he almost stole a series from Calgary last year. I think they need help up front. And it's intriguing to me to hear Kane's name linked to that team because I think that is the biggest need. Easily for Dallas is up front. Hey, you know, is there a John Klingberg reunion in the works? You know, if Anaheim decides to, you know, he's going to be moved. That's intriguing to me. The Vegas Golden Knights, what are they going to do? I mean, as you said, Sean, they're another team that is just battling through one injury after another. And the Edmonton Oilers, you know, every time Edmonton's on TV, it's must watch TV just to watch 97 play. And when they are firing on all cylinders, it looks like the rink is tilted. But they need, you know, I'm not sure they can get help in goal, but on the blue line is a place where, you know, I think they could use some help. Again, they've been linked to Kane. That would be like saying, you know what, we can't find a goalie that's going to lead us to the cup. So we'll just outscore everybody and be like the 1980s Oilers. So Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado, Vegas, and as I mentioned, the Edmonton Oilers. Those are the five teams in the West that intrigue me the most. And they all have warts. They all have loopholes. And that is why it's going to be fascinating to see, of those five teams, who comes out ahead in the trade market.
Look, when I look at Edmonton, two things. One, there's only one puck on the ice, so I don't know how you incorporate Patrick Kane into that mix. And there hasn't been a team in the NHL that's outscored their way to the Stanley Cup maybe since the 1980 Edmonton Oilers.
Right, eh?
You know, the game's completely changed. They learned it again last year, you know, and getting knocked out by Colorado. And two, like, look, they've been linked to Erik Karlsson, and we know that this isn't Ken Holland's first rodeo. He figures out ways to do things. They're a classic money in, money out team, so it's a really hard deal to make. But I also don't know that it helps them. Like, that's not the D they need.
No.
Although him getting the puck to Draisaitl and McDavid would be worth the price of three admissions. But I don't know that that's the playoff move they need. It's a regular season move that I think is beautiful. But so, you know, I think there's very specific things Edmonton needs, and it's not offense. But where are you going to find it? And that's the question for them. Before we get to, I think one of the most intriguing guys that might be on the market, and you kind of hit it around it a little bit, is, you know, we have to deal with the guy who's not intriguing at all. Everybody knows he's on the market and he's most likely going someplace, and that's Patrick Kane, right? And to me, he scores a hat trick earlier this week against your Maple Leafs that you cover. And to me, that was a statement, right? That was, here I am, shut up about my hip. I'm really not that happy that this has gone sideways and that this is where I have to be. And the suitors that I'm interested in are starting to fall by the wayside. The Rangers are out. The Leafs are out. Like, musical chairs is ending, and I don't have a place to sit, and I deserve a place to sit. Mm-hmm. So please take notice of me. Here's a hat trick. All you GMs out there, start calling my GM and saying, wow, that's the Patrick Kane I want. That's the way I took that. You mentioned Carolina, you mentioned Edmonton. Like, I think there's certainly interest in him. But, you know, it has to happen sooner rather than later, yeah. I think. And before you answer that, let me just say, you know, our best wishes to Jonathan Toews, who was also another guy who is likely on the trade market, who's out with long COVID, and we don't know when he's going to be back. We hope he gets better soon, you know, just personally, because it's horrible being sick. And so he's back at the rink, you know, as soon as he can be. But, you know, that changes the dynamic for Chicago a little bit. They don't have two chips now. They just have one.
Well, and I second what you said about Jonathan Toews. We both dealt with him numerous times over his career and ours. And it's a class act from head to toe. And COVID is a type of opponent that it's much, much bigger picture than just hockey. And so, yeah, we do wish him well. You know, Sean, I mean, he would look great with your Bruins or Rosen's Devils, of course, but And even you mentioned Carolina, you know, in terms of Patrick, we're talking about Patrick Kane right now. But you know, again, with Carolina, with the Devils, maybe it pushes them. But I do think, and as I mentioned earlier, the one team that I really like, except they are missing a certain aspect or a certain thing, are the Dallas Stars. I think of all the teams, he's the best fit. Maybe I should rephrase that. They have the biggest need of what he brings to the table. And as you mentioned, like Kane going to Edmonton, that's kind of like when the Kane to Toronto narrative was there a couple weeks ago. And I'm looking going like, yeah, he'd be, who wouldn't want him in your top six? But is that what they need? Is that what they're lacking? No, they need grit. They need somebody that's hard to play with. They got two guys like that. And it's the same for Dallas, except they need offensive punch. And that's why I think he would be the best fit with the Stars.
You mentioned the Devils, and Patrick Kane and Jack Hughes together would be something unbelievable. I mean, Jack grew up idolizing Patrick Kane. Like, Jack's flying now. I was at the Devils game last night against the Canadians. They didn't play well, but Jack was flying. I was with a friend of mine who's not a huge hockey fan, and he was like, look at that 86. Look at him go. Like, right. Oh, my God. Like, he didn't know what was going on. He just knew that that kid was the best player on the ice. To share a locker room with Patrick Kane would be unbelievable. And the Devils are going to be a player. I mean, they have the draft capital. They have the prospect capital. They have the cap capital. They can make whatever Fitzgerald wants happen. So,
and there's a good chance, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a good chance that it might be Devils Rangers in the first round. And I would imagine if that's the case, Tom Fitzgerald is looking at this going like, you know, we've had a great year and that's all fine and good, but you don't want it to end losing to the big boys across the river.
For sure. That plays into it. There's going to be that rivalry. It'll be unbelievable, right? If they play together, you think about all those rivalry games they had back in the day. The Devils are celebrating their 2003 championship on Saturday. Those guys can tell some war stories for sure from 95 on. So 94 on, actually. You hinted at it a little bit. You talked about what Anaheim's going to do, and you mentioned Klingberg. They have some other pieces. But to me, you know, we've mentioned several teams that need a goaltender. And there's a guy sitting there in John Gibson. He's got a lot of term left. Not a ton of money for a goalie. I think he's at like six.
Yeah.
But 3-4 years left. Like, do you think anybody's bold enough to make that move?
Well, I mean, there's teams out there that I think should. I know in Buffalo here, there's been a push that, you know, his name has been mentioned as maybe being a match for the Sabres. Now, for me, if I'm Buffalo, you don't go for the instant gratification. I understand they haven't been in the playoffs for a long time, but how many times have they had this rebuild and then they try to win now and everything goes, gets flushed into the Niagara River? I just think that they got to stay the course. But the one thing about John Gibson, when you read some of the reports, is he likes living in Southern California. I would suggest that he probably would like skating around the ice with a Stanley Cup better. And I know some of the critics have pointed at his numbers, which are not all that good. But look at the team he's playing behind. And I definitely, Sean, I would take a shot on Gibson. In fact, when you talk about some of these teams that need goaltending, you know, there's not a lot of guys that I would say, oh, you can go out and get a number one guy. I still have faith that John Gibson can be a number one guy. You put him on whether it's a Stanley Cup contender, a playoff team, and I think you would see a different John Gibson. So I would take a risk on him.
Yeah, I think if you put him on the Devils right now, and I'm not saying the Devils need to make a goalie change, but if you put him on the Devils right now, he would have numbers similar to Vitek Vanacek.
Yeah.
There's some system play that obviously comes into goaltending. And I just think on a better team, he'd have much better numbers. I agree with you. He's very comfortable in Anaheim. To my knowledge and from what I've heard, he's never asked out, you know, through these lean years. It's an organization that, you know, he's tied to, and he obviously has an emotional investment. You know, to me, the other guy who's really interesting is Korpisalo in Columbus. Been one of the best goalies number-wise since he's come back, and could fit in a lot of places. But goaltenders are hard at the trade deadline. You know, you go to a new team, it's a new defense. You know, Ryan Miller is the classic case study. And let's trade for a really good goalie. And then who is this guy that we have playing for us? Like, he's not the guy that I watched all year. Well, he's not the guy because the defense is trying to block shots, and his old team, they didn't try and block shots. They let him see the puck. He can't talk to them. He doesn't know where they're going to be. Like, I think goaltending is the hardest thing to integrate. And there's some teams that have to try and do it because they're so inferior when it comes to goaltending, but it is a risky, risky business.
Well, you look last year when the Minnesota Wild went out and got Marc-Andre Fleury after Cam Talbot admittedly was having a very good year. And I'm not saying this is Fleury's fault or he played bad, but they were one and done in the playoffs, Sean. They went out and got this goalie. They were going to be solid there. Again, one and done. So it's got to be a good fit, and it's got to be on a team that you can't expect him to carry you. Because like we said earlier in the show, I think there's three or four goalies in this league that can win you. You know, there's a lot of them that can win you a game in the playoffs. There's very few that can win you a series in the playoffs. And I think the jury is out as to whether John Gibson could be one of those guys.
Oh, I definitely think he could. I have all the time in the world. And I'm a little surprised when you said, you know, no to Buffalo. To me, like, that's the kind of move that Kevin Adams should be looking to make. Like, you need to show faith in this team, but you can't do it with rentals. You can't start giving away pieces for a one round. Because, look, if you're a Buffalo fan, like, you're excited. What are your options when you get in the playoffs?
Yeah.
You're going to get in as the 7 or 8 seed. So you're going to play the Bruins,
Boston,
or the Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you good enough to beat either one in a 7-game series? I think the most diehard Buffalo fan would be like, that's a big ask. But now, if you make a move like Gibson, you have him.
Well, I do agree with you there, because he does have term. And that's something that, because, you know, you have to look at long term. And Sean, to that point, I thought it really intriguing, and I'm just circling back to Meyer just for a second, but there's reports out there that the St. Louis Blues are interested in Meyer. That's brilliant on Doug Armstrong's part for my purposes, because, you know, everybody thinks, oh, they're selling off. They get rid of O'Reilly, who's in his 30s. Tarasenko doesn't want to be there. So you get all this draft capital, and then you know, to turn it around and bring in a guy, like you said, that you think you can, you know, you think he can re-sign, but he's younger. So he is, you know, you're thinking 2 or 3 moves ahead. And I think that's, you know, I've come to your line of thinking on Gibson and Buffalo, because you're not just thinking about, oh, we got to make the playoffs this year. Because even if you don't, you have a guy in place for the next 1, 2, 3 years. For the instant gratification, there might be some other teams that he's a better fit for, because I'm not sure they get out of the first round with him. But looking 2 or 3 years ahead of, I think he would be a great fit.
They get to grow together, right?
Yeah.
So I agree with you 100% on Doug Armstrong. Like, this guy doesn't fold the tent.
Mm-mm.
He's like David Poile, right? Like in Nashville, he's not going to fold the tent and say, well, that's it. This failed. I'm going to pull the plug and I'm going to take all these picks and I'm going to invest them in young players and we'll be back in 5 years. That's not going to happen, right? So I think he's going to take some of this draft capital. And if it's not at the trade deadline when you're paying premiums, you know, maybe it's at the draft, but he's going to bring in veteran guys, young veteran guys with term to build around Kyrou, yeah, and Thomas and those players, right? And Colton Parayko is going to be better. You know, I think this has just been one of those lost years for him. He's lost his confidence and, you know, he'll find it again. He's not this bad a defenseman. You know, they got to figure out their goaltending. They got to figure out who Binnington is.
Yeah, very much.
And you know, kind of go from there. But I want to talk about two other teams that have won the cup recently before we get out of here, that I'm really super concerned about. And it brings us back into the East, right? The Pittsburgh Penguins can't win a game. They're coughing up leads to the team that they need to beat in the Islanders. That's the team that's chasing them down for one of those wild card spots. And the Washington Capitals have lost 5 games in a row. They've looked bad doing it. Yes, Alex Ovechkin's been gone, and he's back today. We're taping this on Wednesday. He's back from his dad's funeral, and we wish Alex the best. And he should be playing soon. He should practice and be ready to go soon. But for the Capitals, it goes deeper than Alex Ovechkin. He's only one piece, and it goes deeper than John Carlson, who's also been out, and that's killed him. You know, I talked to those guys after the game to help out Tom Gallitti, who's doing a sidebar on them. You know, and TJ Oshie says the playoffs start right now for us. We're out of runway, And the first game after that, they lose to a Detroit team that's coming on hard. But they're slow. They're uninterested. Like, not uninterested in a bad way. Just they're kind of like, they're not in the fight, right? Like, it seems like there's a lot of guys going different directions, and they're not all going in the same direction. So we could have two really high pedigree teams not make the playoffs this year. And that opens the door for a Buffalo, a Detroit, and Ottawa, who's just been unbelievable lately, and maybe a buyer at the deadline now. They may have convinced Pierre Dorion to be a buyer. So that bottom half, while we talk about how good the top of the East is, that bottom half of the East just intrigues the daylights out of me.
Well, first of all, hello, John Gibson. How do you feel about Canada's capital? Speaking of teams that need goaltending, but you know, you used a great four-letter word about the Washington Capitals, and that would be S-L-O-W, slow. I remember the Leafs had their home opener this year against the Capitals, and they came in, and I could not believe the lack of foot speed through that lineup. Now, granted, Nick Backstrom wasn't there, but I just feel that yes, they're a team of older proven veterans, but when you sprinkle in the supporting cast, there's not a lot of speed there. And I know the game slowed down during the playoffs, but I just, you know, you talk about that Devils team, Sean. They're so fast. Carolina, what do you think of? Speed, forecheck, pressure hockey. And I have issues with Washington being able to counter that. And I know there's been a lot of criticism of Darcy Kemper, and yeah, he hasn't been that great, but it cuts way deeper than him. Pittsburgh, we'll see now that Jari is back, if that's any better. Casey DeSmith definitely was not the answer. But what I find about the Penguins is a couple things. Number one, they seem to be blowing a lot of leads, even at home. And number two, they're getting a lot of shots, but they're not finishing. And I find that very head-scratching. When you've got a team with Gensel and Rust and Crosby and Malkin, and you're producing offense, but you're not getting the results, that's a little frustrating, I think. And it'll be interesting. I mean, we all know Berkey doesn't like sitting on his hands, although he used to tell us in Toronto that never are players – the value of a player is never more inflated than at the trade deadline. But I really think that they need to do something to shake this team up, because if you can't get motivated by Sidney Crosby, there's something wrong.
My one concern is Brian's usually the first to market, and he's not. So I wonder if he's going to make a move. I mean, he knew what this team was 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And he didn't address it when the prices were a little bit lower. So I don't know if he'll address it now. But this has been great. We didn't even miss Dan. He'll be back next week, but we didn't miss him because you were fantastic. We went around the league. We did a little bit of everything. We want to thank Kyle Coppabianco and Mason Appleton for stopping by. And before we go, Zeiss, I just want to remind you, today is February 22nd. Today is one of the greatest days in hockey history. And before we go,
believe in miracles.
I do believe in miracles.
Yes.
And before we go, we should acknowledge one of the most famous moments in hockey. Oh. And arguably, as we celebrate Hockey Week across America, arguably the most important moment in American hockey history. It made me a hockey player. It made countless people my age, the Billy Guerins and the Mike Modanos and the Chris Chelioses and all those guys, wannabe players. It inspired generations of hockey players to the point where Americans are now on semi-equal footing with the Canadians. Mm-hmm. But 43 years ago today, a miracle happened. And before we left here, I just wanted to bring it up to my Canadian cohort.
Well, I got to say, I mean, very quickly, just wanted to point out, we got to see it live. You guys had to see it in tape delay, okay? But no, I think, you know, as a Canadian, I always thought that Henderson's goal in 72, because nobody knew what the Russians were about, was number one, and Ruzioni is number two. I could easily switch those around because of what it did for U.S. hockey. I think has there ever been a better David than Goliath against Goliath in in sports. And, you know, I'll end it with this. Time Magazine, it was either Time Magazine or Sports Illustrated in 2000, listed the top sporting moments in North America, or in the either in the U.S. or North America of the century. And Mike Ruzzioni's goal in the Miracle on Ice was number one. And when you consider, you know, hockey never being in the mainstream, and whether it's Babe Ruth or it's, you know, Tom Brady or whatever, something in a football crazed country, that a hockey moment would be the top sporting moment of the century. I mean, I think that says it all. And, you know, yes, Al Michaels, I agree after seeing that happen. Yes, I believe in miracles.
Mike, when you said you saw it live, I thought you were going to tell me you covered it. but I guess that's
they didn't
not
let
the
me
case.
Out. They wouldn't let me out of nursery school, so no, Sean, I did.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have one more show before the trade deadline. The trade deadline's next Friday, March 3rd. We'll have a show right before that, laying out all this. A lot of the things we talked about will have probably come to fruition by then, but there'll be new rumors to deal with. And Dan will be back to run the circus next week, and we look forward to seeing you guys all then. Until then, enjoy the hockey and enjoy the trade rumors.